SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, and as I adjust the head on the audio, and at our website, stevebick.com, and Sirius XM Online, 964, Sports Zone. A beautiful, gosh, it finally feels like spring is springing, sun and warmer temps, and nice to be home for all of 4 days, whatever it is, leaving for Baltimore on Sunday. I think we'll get down there Sunday afternoon, and we'll look forward to the most challenging turnaround in I think almost, I guess not, can't say in all of sports, because I suppose NFL, you know, they're playing week to week and those physical demands. But it is a challenge. Just the 2 weeks, and right now, so far, coming out of Derby, still in the wake, the aftermath. It doesn't appear that there's going to be too many that are going to line up, and pending decisions from a couple of horses, including Good Magic and Quip. Quip seems to be more likely now than he was on Sunday. Elliot was going to join us today, but he actually asked to push it back. He ended up tied up in a morning meeting, and so tomorrow 10:30 for Elliot Walden, and there's actually lots of follow up, not just Derby related and Triple Crown season related, because there was also other successes, other major horses that the Windstar team and the myriad of ownership groups. You know, it is an, I guess it's an optimal situation if you're part of those agglomeration of connections. You probably can sneak into a lot of wind photos. Who can keep track? Right? Of course I'm in this group. Yes, I'm part of Yoshida. Right? Because I forgot. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm not. I just we're going to talk to Elliot because, you know, Yoshida mentioned fairly important. I want to get his read. Word is they're looking at Royal Ascot. Those rumblings. There's more encroachment by Royal Ascot than there is by the lava. At Kilauea. How about it? It's unbelievable, right? My God. You know, I had to go through Cambridge, and I had heard over the weekend, Tina had gotten word there had been a tornado here. But don't worry, there's no change in weather patterns. But a tornado in upstate New York in May. And I had to drive through Cambridge and Shushan, and it was scary. I was stunned, actually, by how many uprooted trees. And I don't mean branches. I mean trees ripped out of the ground. But on the upside, there isn't the prospect here of molten magma rolling over our car or home. Amazing, right? Well, we are curious who else might want to participate at Baltimore, because tomorrow I've got to turn in, the ExpressBet Preakness wagering guide. And I think back to Rachel Alexandra, where I went out on the limb and we knew that there was the sale that was happening, and Jess Jackson. So, you know, that knowledge prompted the inclusion of Rachel and the selection of her for Preakness that year. And here it's going to take a little, I mean, obviously we'll have a chance starting next Tuesday, a week from today, to, you know, to amend whoever else is going to be involved. And the name that turned up overnight, tenfold, from Steve Asmussen and Ron Winchell. And here is another lightly raced three-year-old and a horse that also didn't participate as a two-year-old. He's a Curlin, and so he has the potential, both he and Good Magic, both Curlins, if both or either participate, to do something that they're, particularly in Good Magic's case, what his sire did. And that is, you even heard Chad Brown say that, you know, one of the things that kind of was spurring him on to continue and potentially continue with Good Magic. I mean, he's got summer goals, Travers, as the principal objective. But, yeah, you come out of this and your horse is super fit, and you know, why not? Why wouldn't you? And, of course, Chad Brown winning his first classic last year with Cloud Computing. So we'll wait for that decision and more. Lone Sailor showing up on the radar screen from Amos and Mrs. Benson. And the two Lucases, Sporting Chance, of course, and Bravazo, and Sporting Chance, who ran a sneaky good race after having terrible trouble. This horse is just... who was the... I never remember because I wasn't a Little Abner reader, but who was the character, right, in Little Abner that with the cloud was over him all the time? that's Sporting Chance. Sporting Chance has got the more trouble lines than you can imagine for a horse that's only run seven times. But he ran a sneaky good race, and so after not getting the chance to participate in Derby, he's got a pretty nice resume, as it happens, despite all the incidents that have kind of dogged him. And you know, Dwayne Lucas, with longtime client Baker and Mac, with this pricey Tisnow colt. So Sporting Chance and Bravazo, and it's hard not to think back to Oxbow. It really isn't. So Bravazo outran his odds 67 to 1, and ran that kind of even race. So Lamini got shuffled back early and then split the field, but Bravazo more or less ran that race that kind of was expecting from Solomini, that steady chug along. And you also, of course, are going to be talking to John Service. In this case, Diamond King, who won his way in the Tessio, from the Tessio win. And Diamond King, the quality road colt, was a Timonium purchase, and of course next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the Breeze Show at Timonium, ahead of the sale, right after Preakness, Monday and Tuesday, 21st and 22nd. A lot of good Mid-Atlantic types This you know, that used to be a big bargain. It's less of a bargain than it used to be. It's like one of those restaurants that nobody goes to anymore because they're too busy. So the Preakness watch is on, obviously. And a number of people I know got a lot of feedback about Baffert yesterday and his, if you were listening to the overnight just now, the replay. He had some funny, that was a funny line about, I had to put that out on Twitter because that was a funny line about wishing that he had been watching the Derby on TVG so that he didn't have to see the fractions and know how fast they went early. That was good. We've got, what do we have? I've got Mark Cassie in a little bit. Cassie with a busy weekend, and between Salty's win in the La Troyenne and then the two Canadian breads that will now look toward the Queen's Plate. Second with Wonder Godot in the Oaks. Flame Away, who didn't really get out sharply and gain the position that he expected. But where'd he end up? 12th? 13th. But he was third. He got to third after a half mile. And then fourth at a mile. And then started to get past and started to retreat. But he really wasn't... Everything we expected in terms of him breaking with promises fulfilled didn't entirely come to pass. In fact, I went back yesterday, last night, I went back and looked at what James and I, Scully and I did with the pace quadrants, and there were like three horses, and of course the Mendelsohn fiasco getting slammed, and that the pressure is going to mount regarding the 20-horse field, the 20-horse gate, because everybody seems to agree that it's just not fair. It's not a good way to launch the race. It invites trouble immediately. And okay, yeah, we understand. Yeah, it's a once-a-year gate. We're going to talk to Andy Serling. Andy and David Aragona did a terrific post-race analysis video. Andy's Across the Board podcast show thing that he does. He and David did I'll send out the link to it. They did a terrific post-race analysis. I'll let Andy riff on that, but I also want to get the results from the weekend in New York. We'll get some West Coast results as well. Derby thoughts from John White. Jeremy Plonk later, countdown to the crown. Stuart Pittman, who of course founded the Thoroughbred Makeover. Stuart's going to be here as well, and much more. Stay with us, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey folks, Eddie Olchek here. In my career, I've experienced all of North America's biggest sporting events, and none of them are quite as fun as the Preakness Stakes. It's a weekend-long party in Baltimore, complete with the best three-year-olds racing for the middle jewel of the Triple Crown. And this year, my friends at ExpressBet are giving one lucky customer the chance to join me and Marilyn for the big race. What do you have to do to win? Sign up for their $25,000 Preakness Big Bet Sweepstakes and start betting the races with ExpressBet. The grand prize winner gets tickets to the race, hotel accommodations, airfare, and more. Plus, ExpressBet is giving you $25,000 to bet on the Preakness. That's right, 25 grand. With ExpressBet picking up the tab, you get to play the Preakness Stakes like a high roller. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more and register today. And I hope to see you in the winner's circle.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
And we're slow to acknowledge the knots in the laces. Hearted races. And we go back to where we moved out to the places. Hearted races. I bought it in the can and stirred it.
Architecture in Helsinki, right? Here's the pace quadrant. Just happened to be on top of this collection. I've got a stack of news and notes. We plenty to digest here over the next couple of days. We expected Promises Fulfilled, Justify, Noble Indy, Flame Away, and Mendelssohn to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 early. Let's say through the first quarter plus, and he ended up with Promises Fulfilled first, Justify second, Noble Indy was fifth, but Flame Away was sixth at that point. And Mendelssohn, after being squeezed, you know, back to that gate situation, was ninth. The second, the near the lead horses we kind of anticipated were Magnum Moon, Good Magic, Enticed, Bravazo, and Solomini. Now, Magnum Moon was 10th, you know, basically in there somewhere. Bravazo was 8th. But Good Magic, of course, was absolutely perfectly placed. And, in fact, who were we talking to yesterday? Had Justify not gotten out as sharply as he did, Good Magic may have been in that catbird seat position, and that, but it just, you know, Justified, despite, you know, his heft and, you know, the fact that he those three first starts hadn't exactly popped out like the proverbial champagne cork, but he did here, and Smith had him absolutely perfectly ready to launch. Enticed was 11, so he was not far off of that. Solomini was the surprise here, because we thought, and maybe that was a mistake by James and I, because Baffert had said that they were going to let him settle and come with one run. But we thought that with his even style, that he would, you know, be mid-pack, and so we put him 10th. The third stalking group, and that was pretty much correct, with Vino Rosso. We had Vino Rosso, Instilled Regard, Audible, Bolt Doro, and Firenze Fire. And Firenze Fire actually was seventh after first call. And that was really a function. And he was in perfect position. I mean, if he was a horse that had been, you know, really capable, you know, by his makeup to go a mile and a quarter, he certainly, from the difficult post, Lopez got him out, and he was having a good trip. It's not like Firenze Fire, you know, got absolutely mashed coming out of the gate. And he ended up 11th. And so I don't know how many head-to-head bets, you know, people might have had. But, you know, some people originally thought, oh, he's a candidate to be last. But he got out and ran a credible race. Bolt Doro was much closer than I think anybody expected. He was third early. And that may have been, you know, the idea was that it seemed the way we talked about the pace scenario early on, that it was more likely or potentially a better scenario for him to have the kind of trip maybe that, to some degree, maybe that Audible had. You know, that, and, of course, you know, the wet track changes everything. I mean, that, and I'm sure Andy, when you let Andy expand on that and what you see in the video he did with Aragona, you'll hear that. I mean, the field has a tendency to, mentioned yesterday, to spread out. And then, you know, the horses that were in the back, Vino Rosso and In Still Regard were 18th and 17th. We thought they'd be a little closer stalking, and they were a little further back. And the other back-enders, Hofberg was 16th. That was right on. Free Drop Billy was 14th. And actually, Free Drop Billy ended up having to, you know, shuffle back and then try to launch. Combatant was actually 13th early and moved backwards from there. Combatant probably as big a disappointment as anything in here. Lone Sailor was 15th, and My Boy Jack was 19th. So there were a few horses that were either by virtue of the conditions and some changes and decisions to, you know, move around and be more aggressive. I'll give you another one. You know, they're just all these were all the little things that we brought up in the 2 weeks leading up. You recall that I mentioned the May foals, and there's no shortage of history of May foals doing well in the Derby. It's not as if it's some, you know, some just permanent guarantee that being a May foal is a negative, because it's not. And there's been 8, 9, 10 May foals that have won, including War Admiral, by the way. And War Admiral won his Derby on this date, May 8th, in 1937. And there's actually a lot more to that Derby. I put up a tweet about with a video clip. And in fact, War Admiral's win, notably, it occurs to me, War Admiral's win in the Derby, not visually, is a lot like he beat Pompoon, who was very good, and he beats Pompoon visually. If you watch that video, it's a lot like Justify and Good Magic. When they turn for home, Pompoon is you know, merging and chasing. War Admiral was on. Kurtzinger breaks on top, and actually he leaves from the one hole. You want to talk about the Derby gate for a second? Go to that video. This is in the era before the shoot, and if you think being in the one hole now is a challenge, go take a look at that video where they used to start just off the top of the stretch, off the turn, against the inner rail. The one hole, it's miraculous any horse ever won from the one hole back then. You should see this. And this was a 20-horse field that year in 37. It's quite something. And Kurtzinger gets him out perfectly, and he takes control when they straighten. He's right on top and leads them all the way around. But he was a May foal, War Admiral. In fact, here they are. War Admiral, May 2nd. Lucky Debonair, May 2nd. Mind That Bird, May 10th. Cannonade, May 12th. My brother's birthday. Spend a Buck, May 15th. Thunder Gulch, May 23rd. Northern Dancer, May 27th. And Exterminator, May 30th. And, of course, Exterminator was a historic footnote Saturday too, because it was his Derby that had been previously the wettest. Anyway, back to the May foals this year. Combatant, Free Drop Billy, Magnum Moon, Promises Fulfilled, and Mendelssohn. 18th, 16th, 19th, 15th, and 20th. So, not a good year. 2018, they're not going to be remembered as a great year for the May Foles. So there's another. So many. There's just so much on the history front. We'll also mention that May 8th, since we had so much fun with this last week, May 8th, which obviously 7 days, you know, 7 days in May, you can't. There's obviously the second Saturday in May. So there's only been, there was a handful, because of course the Derby was not always run every single time in its 144 runnings on the first Saturday. May 8th would have been the second Saturday, obviously, but not only was May 8th, 1915, regret was her winning, and of course a very important Derby, really the Derby that propelled the race into a, you know, into the stratosphere even back then. It really elevated. I mean, it was, you know, regarded. But I mean, just the fact, frankly, mentioning War Admiral, just the fact that Riddle didn't want to send Man of War there, he thought, it's not all that important. That was 1920. So, but 1915 really helped elevate the race. With regret, then you go from May, from 1915 to 1937. Mary Hirsch, Max Hirsch's daughter, becomes the first woman to saddle a contender in the Derby. And his name was No Sir, finished 13th in that Derby. So just curiously, two very notable the filly, two-legged and four-legged fillies in the May 8th Derby pantheon. Mary Hirsch and Regret. So there's the history footnote for today. I'm kind of going through all these things and crossing them off. The piece we mentioned last week from Joe Nevels. Joe wrote that piece about average winning distance, which is a underappreciated handicapping stat. And it just so happened that Arch scored out the best. Why is that important? The sire of Instilled Regard. And as Sid, and we'll join Sid tomorrow for his recap, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And I thought, keep that in mind. Keep that one in mind. And I'm sure Joe will do that annual, make that an annual column. Between that and the haiku handicapper, he's made a mark. But, you know, the people that attack, I didn't like him at all, but the Instilled Regard camp, and we had who? We had Sid, and we had Doug mentioned him as well as one of the late runners with pedigree that could fit. The only horse that Doug didn't utilize in his analysis was Audible. But Sid and Doug and Tony Black, they all had mentioned that Instilled Regard, you know, looked like the type that could get a piece. And as the longest shot on the board, he was absolutely, you know, he's this year's exotic hero for those that hit the super. And while we're on this topic, a few other people. Mike Welch, he had Audible on top. And as you know, if you think back to Mike's visit, his visit before that was on Thursday, Wednesday or Thursday, after he'd made his final plays. But he was flipping and flopping with Audible and Justify, but he had them basically together. He had Good Magic and Vino Rosso. So Mike within his tabs. Jeremy Plonk will join us later Jeremy's principal three was the triple. He had it inversed, but still, audible, good magic. Justify, Rich Ang. Justify, he went justify, bolt, good magic, audible. So Rich had the natural try within his four. And Johnny, of course, justifying good magic, as the way he and I both saw it. Then he had my boy Jack and Lone Sailor. He was looking for those kinds of clunk ups. Of course, Davis, the Rogers, he had justified. Jimmy Ventura, justify on top, and good magic in his mix on the bottom. Hammer, of course, was all over justify. And yeah, those were the. Who else? Yeah, those are the principal ones. Jay Privman, he went justify Hofburg, good magic, bolt, which were my four, final four, actually. And justify on top. Those are, yeah, there you go. That's the majority. Steve Haskin, yeah, Steve gave a five pack. He went bolt, vino, audible, justify, good magic. So he had the try box within his tabs as well. So there's just a couple of, you know, kind of hitting the highlights. And of course, we'll talk to everybody between now and Friday. Let's do this. We'll take the break here. When we come back, Mark Cassie, going to join us, and we'll talk, all of his weekend participants. Andy Serling, Jay Privet. Jay is going to get his recap in. Ben Colbrook and Brendan Walsh. Stuart Pittman. And John White and Jeremy Plunk. There you go. There's your show. Mark Cassie, when we come back.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey folks, Eddie Olczyk here. In my career, I've experienced all of North America's biggest sporting events, and none of them are quite as fun as the Preakness Stakes. It's a weekend-long party in Baltimore, complete with the best three-year-olds racing for the middle jewel of the Triple Crown. And this year, my friends at ExpressBet are giving one lucky customer the chance to join me and Marilyn for the big race. What do you have to do to win? Sign up for their $25,000 Preakness Big Bet Sweepstakes and start betting the races with ExpressBet. The grand prize winner gets tickets to the race, hotel accommodations, airfare, and more. Plus, ExpressBet is giving you $25,000 to bet on the Preakness. That's right, 25 grand. With ExpressBet picking up the tab, you get to play the Preakness Stakes like a high roller. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more and register today. And I hope to see you in the winner's circle.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
To At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I turned around when I heard sound.
We're back at the races, bottom of hour one on this Tuesday. Mark Cassie joining us, and Cassie had a big weekend, and it certainly was productive. It could have been magical, obviously. Wonder Gadot coming within just a tiny bit of getting her head in front and becoming an Oaks winner, but you fold in the grade one win earlier on the card, Salty winning under Tyler Gaffalione, the La Troyenne, and then awesome Slough, who, boy, there was a point in that stretch drive in the Churchill Downs on Saturday that he looked like he was going to forge to the front. Mark Cassie, congratulations on a excellent, excellent weekend that I haven't even mentioned. Curlin's Honor winning the Woodstock.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you.
And I haven't mentioned that you won the English Channel as well, didn't you? With the, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Let's start with the grade one win. And Salty, and you had a couple of decisions to make, some cross entries, and it felt like, you know, you made the right decisions. And getting a grade one for Salty, that's a terrific outcome.
It was, and I had some good help along the way. I have to say, you know, Gary Barber, so he's a great handicapper, and we made that decision. It wasn't all me; it was him as well, and we looked at it, and it turned out to be the right move. So it was nice. For Salty, I feel like she deserved a grade one win. She'd been unlucky a couple times, and she deserved it because she is a grade one horse.
Well, multiple grade one placed coming in, and of course, last year tried the Oaks and got untracked late and had plenty of trouble and was a little sneaky in this case, and in this group, here came Abel Tasman and everybody kind of reconvening. There was a lot of that going on this Derby weekend, but Abel Tasman never factored, trailed early and never involved, but running down Farrell, that was a task, and you know, getting to a horse that was out in space like that, you had to be impressed with both Gaffalione and the way Salty dug in.
Well, you know, obviously not much was said since we won, but we didn't have the best of trips. You know, you're right. I think it was Farrell's race to win, given the pace scenario, and we were a little disappointed to see, obviously, the scratch of apologies not accepted, I believe. And you know, we got about the quarter pole, we got shut down a little bit. But, you know, we're all trying to do the same thing, and that is not let Farrell get too far away because we know she was the speed of the race. But once our filly dropped down into the inside and switched lead, she took off. And, you know, a great ride by Tyler. I think he's a future star. I think he's the next I told Johnny this the other day. I said he's the next you. I think the sky's the limit for Tyler, and obviously you know Gary feels the same way. I feel the same way, and that's why you see us taking him places around, because we feel like he's as good a rider as anybody.
You think when I think about South Florida riders who came along with outfits, the one I think of very similar to this is Luis Saez. David Fox brought him to New York, and that was the first time I kind of saw him on a big stage. And I remember saying to David, we watched that was a 3-year-old filly race, and he made a tremendous move, Saez, up the rail. And I said, "Wow!" I said, "This kid's all right." He said, "Oh," David said, "He's gonna be a star." And you're doing the same thing with Tyler.
Well, and you know what, the thing about Tyler as well, he's got so much ability, but his attitude is, you know, he's a great young man, and you want to help him, and you see it, and you know he has it, and he's ridden a lot of races for us, and he does a great job, and I'm happy that we could provide him with his first Grade One winner.
Well, that is obviously a memorable portion. You also, after getting beat less than a length in that wild Madison finish, stretched her back out, and you were wavering. I mean, talk about what tipped the scales, and you know how you utilize now a horse like this, you know, with the Grade One under the belt, and she's obviously versatile. You could go to the ballerina as soon as the personal ensign, I suppose.
Yeah, we're gonna probably, I guess, is it the personal ensign mile and a 16th race at Belmont? That's where we're gonna go next.
The Phipps. That's the Phipps.
What's that?
That's the Ogden Phipps.
Yeah, the Ogden Phipps. I can't remember. You know, she can do a little bit of anything. I think she prefers a little bit more ground. As far as the decision the other day, you know, Gary and I talked about it. And when you handicap the two races, I thought there were four or five fillies that could win the sprint, where we thought, you know, the horse to beat obviously was Abel Tasman. And both of us agreed that if we were ever going to take her on, you know, the other day was the time to do it. And it worked out well. But, you know, that being said, I feel like we have, you know, as good as any older mare in the country. And we're not going to duck anybody. So she proved it the other day.
Well, Quality Road Philly, and the four-year-old looks to come to New York, and looking forward to the whole distaff division. And it's nice also to, you know, this is an important step for so many horses, Mark. And it felt like the weekend, you know, we'll reconvene for Breeders' Cup, and you know, a lot of the principals are going to be, you know, banging heads again, and that very well could include the distaff for the fillies and mares on the Friday Breeders' Cup card. Let's talk about Wonder Godot and her outstanding effort in the Oaks, and looked off the turn like she was going to catch the leader, and just could not get by. Some thoughts?
Oh, I'm just proud of her. I mean, she comes to play each and every time. You know, we could have been maybe a little we had a few things go against us. You know, Johnny felt like, I guess about maybe the 5/16th pole, I believe it was Saez had some trouble in, and Johnny thought for a second that Saez may go down, and he had to check our filly, and he said it really cost him some momentum, he said, or he would have blown by that filly. And then it would have been more difficult for the other filly to come back. Nobody has more respect for me, more respect for Mana Magrero than me. I mean, I've seen her, I've run against her. In fact, we have the only filly to ever beat her, I believe. Or maybe she got beat. I don't know if she won her first start. Yeah, but we have Road to Victory, another Quality Road filly. But, you know, I agree with the Stewart's decision. I mean, a race of the magnitude of the Oaks, I think, you know, it has to be without reasonable doubt that the outcome could have been different. But what hurt us the most was the third bump. There were three bumps, but the third bump is when she kind of knocked us off stride, and you'll see our filly go to her left lead, and that's when she gave up the ground. It was going to be, I'm not going to say we were going to beat her, but it was going to be extremely close had they not bumped. So, but I agree with it. It's just too big a race to take away from a well-deserved winner. And so I am disappointed, but I understand, and we'll move on, and we'll get our Oaks another day. It would have been nice you know, Gary has been such a great supporter of ours. I mean, him and I won our first Queen's Plate together. We won our first Breeders' Cup together, and I was hoping for us to win our first Oaks, but we'll get it another day.
Yeah, game effort at a big number too, and she touted herself virtually the entire run up. It was obvious. There was one day when I first got to Louisville that she was a little headstrong and a little bit of a runoff, and then that moderated, and she got better and better and more focused as the 10 days, 12 days led up, and didn't disappoint in terms of her.
She has such effort. A high, extreme amount of energy that some days you can't hold it in as well. the following that big effort in the Oaks, the next day, you know, she was bouncing around wanting to know when she was going to run again. So she's an amazing horse. She's an amazing horse.
The Queen's Plate you mentioned, and of course we're going to talk, we'll talk Flame Away next. Might as well go right from Oaks to Derby, and the two of them, you know, the advantage of the opportunity to point for the plate, fold in both actually, and we'll merge the conversations into Saturday and Derby.
Okay. Want to start about Flame Away?
Well, first, Wonder Godot, to get to Queen's Plate, what would be the path?
Well, right now, Gary and I, you know, talked about it, and she's going to head to Woodbine here probably next week and aim for the Oaks, the Canadian Oaks.
Okay.
It's 3 weeks Good. Before the Queen's Plate. It's the same thing we did with Lexi Liu. The funny part, well, not the funny part, the good part about it is I think her best surface is Tapeta. So I would think she'll be a pretty strong factor in the Canadian Oaks.
Nice. Oaks and then back 3 weeks for the plate for mm-hmm. her. Let's talk about Derby and the conditions deteriorated as the afternoon went on. Nobody really expected to go that direction. You know, we also had the, we'll get back to some of the turf racing as well, Mark, but you know, knowing what was ahead for Derby, what were your, any changing views or thoughts about the approach for how Flame Away was going to attack the race?
Well, not really. I mean, we had a plan and we didn't change. It was just so disappointing for the entire day. I had said going into that weekend, this is a little mini Breeders' Cup. You know, you looted on, you know, the distaff. And, I mean, we had some great races. And, I mean, they could have easily been Breeders' Cup races. So, you know, as a horse trainer, the only thing you ask, you know, you work and you plan and you get everybody ready. And there's so many things that can go wrong. And when you finally get there, you're just happy you got there. You're happy. Your horses are ready. And then, you know, the rains just destroyed everything. I mean, yep. And you get no, you really don't know. You don't learn anything from it. I'm probably the horse that disappointed me as much as anybody was Mississippi. I mean, the Pat Day Mile was crazy. I mean, you had Mask, he never showed up. You had Mississippi, he never showed up. I think Todd's horse, the one.
Yep.
So that's just frustrating. As far as the Derby goes, we were right where we wanted to be, and he looked like he was running very comfortably. Jose said he was extremely happy where he was. He said he was into the bit. He said when he went to the far turn and he jumped to his left lead, he said he just let go of the bit, which is, that's not something that he does. So Jose asked him to go a little bit, and he said he didn't. And then all once he took off again, and you can see him kind of drop back, then make a middle move. But he stayed on his left lead down the lane. And then at about the eighth pole, he jumped to his right lead, and you could see then that he wasn't comfortable. And you can see the latter part of the race as Jose pulls, he starts pulling him up and just lets him gallop along. So right after the race, we were very concerned that he had possibly hurt himself. So I wasn't disappointed. I was disappointed in the performance, but I was more concerned about his well-being. And we rushed back to the backside, got him back there, and he was fine. So I have a feeling it may have been that he struggled with the track and it was just exhaustion. But we went over him from, he did get cut. He got a pretty good lash gash in his hind leg, but it didn't need stitches. It blew up a little bit. But all in all, he was moving extremely well after the race. He was moving extremely well yesterday morning when I looked at him. And so I was just happy that he was fine.
Yeah.
The race, I just threw it out, and I'm like, whatever it is, it is, and that's okay. At least he's fine. And so you put everything into perspective, and, so he's good, and he'll live to fight another day.
Play trial approach or something else?
Yeah, I would say he'll probably go up next week with Wonder Gadot, and he'll get ready for the plate trial. They run the same day, the Oaks and the plate trial, and we'll do that.
Well, in addition to what was going on in the features and in the grade ones, you had some other performances that notably one that really went, I think, under the radar. Got Stormy against the best competition she's going to face, ran a very sneaky good race in the Edgewood.
It's funny you should say that, because I was as proud of her as I was of anybody. Like you just alluded to, that was the best of the best. Those are the best three-year-old turf fillies. And Gut Stormy has just gotten better with each and every race. Again, we got just a magnificent ride out of Tyler. I feel maybe a mile is more her game. But she's a filly that's doing really well. And, I mean, ran a huge race. She may end up, it's something Gary and I still have to talk about, she may end up going to Penn National for that $200,000 mile filly race, or we may send her to New York. But that Stormy's turning out to be a pretty good little filly. The other horse that flew under the radar was Geogame. Geogame ran an 88 buyer when in her allowance race, which for a three-year-old filly going around two turns is pretty good.
That came after the Oaks, and it's funny, to some degree, I know there were some people that kind of played against her as the favorite, but that's going to end up being a good group, that Asmussen
filly.
Well,
yeah, if you look, I always look at one, when I'm looking at buyer numbers, they're important. I mean, they're just a tool, but I always like to see separation. If four or five of them finish together and they get big numbers, I kind of doubt it, unless they're really good horses. But I don't remember the name of Steve's filly.
She's a Julie. Philly,
but yeah, they were 15 lengths in front of the third place horse, and it wasn't a bad field. So for those two fillies to be able to separate themselves the way they did, I would say Steve's filly's got a bright future as well.
Agreed. A couple of quick hits, and got to ask about Awesome Slew. You wavered back and forth. You were literally, people were asking all Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, where's Awesome Slew running? And I was in contact with you, and you were absolutely torn. But after Chad's horse demolished the Ali Sheba, it felt like you made the right decision. And then when Awesome Slew mid-stretch, it looked like he was going to absolutely storm home. He got mixed up with Warriors Club and Limousine Liberal. But still, feels like you made the right decision with Slew.
I, you know what, Steve, I felt good after watching Chad's horse win. I don't think there was any way we were going to beat him. Disappointed for the Derby Day simply because of the track. I wish we, wish we had had a fast track. You know, I had rode Awesome Slough for the first time. Johnny had elected to, you know, ride another horse for Todd, which we understand. I mean, Todd has been his longtime supporter and Mike Rapoli, and so we understood all that. I think it was more about loyalty than necessarily who was the best horse. But Irad rode him extremely well. He was pretty frustrated after the race. He said if he'd known him better, he said he would have won the race. He said that he probably made a premature move, made the lead, and when he made the lead, Awesome Slough pulled himself up, which he can do a little bit of that sometimes. So, you know what? It was a good performance. We got beat two heads or something. I love Awesome Slough. I think he's just a classy horse. He comes and he runs hard, and we're going to aim him for the Met Mile and, you know, see how that goes. But I was disappointed and proud. I was, you know, twice in 2 days, it looked like Wonder Godot was going to win, and then he was going to win. But as long as they run well, I'm extremely happy and extremely proud. You know, so, hey, I got used to Classic Empire got beat a nose in the Preakness. So, you know, you better learn to take it, because if not, it'll eat you up, and I don't let it eat me up.
Well, the two runners also, we should mention, La Cornell and Dream Dancing, out of the distaff, and of course, turf course gets inundated. Any thoughts, any immediate plans?
Well, Cornell was really disappointing, and they had a problem going on, and the jockeys went, and this is something that probably nobody knows. So what I'm going to tell you is there was some real problems with Churchill Downs. They were playing music while the horses were in the gate, and the music is so loud that the starter can't hear the riders. And Jose was telling him, no, don't break, because La Cornell was throwing her head and wasn't standing still. And they couldn't hear because the music was blasting. And so, you know, La Cornell has to be up close to the lead. And she broke terrible. She broke in the air. And Jose had to make a decision. Did he want to drive up and be eight wide going into the first turn or take her back? Well, once you do that, it's over for her. And I thought Jose made the right decision, because the other would have been, there would have been no chance. But we're going to take La Cornell's race out, and we'll find her another place. She's run well. She so far has found the older girls maybe a little tougher than the 3-year-old fillies were last year, and so she's still trying to find her place. We got to get her some confidence. Dream Dancing, on the other hand, had a perfect trip under Javier, and she just wasn't good enough. But she ran well.
Well, quick hits, Mark, the maneuver to the Woodstock with Curlin's Honor. This is that pricey colt that came out of the Rebel, and something went sideways there.
He's a horse that has a lot of talent. He broke his maiden, and we had some issues with him. Had to give him some time. He came back, and he ran well at Fairgrounds, had a troubled trip, and obviously we probably got a little, they call it Derby fever, and to do that, we had to, you know, when you have, people don't realize, the average person or handicapper or race fan doesn't realize, but once you've won two races with a young horse, there's nowhere to run them.
Yeah, where are you going to go?
You have to run. You know, people say, well, why would you do this? Why? We have to play the hand that's dealt to us. And so we had to make a decision, and that would be sit on him and do nothing or take a shot and run him in the rebel. It was a quick race back, which probably didn't help matters. We asked him to do something that he had never done before, not just run two turns, but we asked him to get up and go. He had had an inside post, and his first two races, we've let him settle and come with a run. Well, we knew that we had to take advantage of our inside post to have a chance, and we rushed him off his feet. And I don't know that he liked that. So when you have a bad experience like he did, you have to, one, you don't want, you have to get their confidence back, and you have to let, so you have to regroup. So we looked at our options, and we thought that, you know, that made sense. And he was impressive. I mean, I think he ended up running an 87 buyer. He ran 2/5 or 3/5 off the track record, which is set by Pink Floyd, who is
out of control.
You know, he's an extremely talented horse. So his race was very good. It looks like right now we may shoot him over. The synthetic for open horses slows down right now in Toronto because everything now goes to concentrating on Canadian bred for the Queen's Plate and the Oaks. So you'll probably see him somewhere on the grass. It may be at Belmont. I forget the name of the race. Or I may take him. We may take him to the Penn Mile. But our feeling is that he's going to really like the grass. Most of them that like Tapita like the grass. You know what? He's a horse that has an extreme amount of talent. We got to get his confidence and get him on the right track. And the other day was a good step for him.
Well, a lot of good things happening. I mentioned the win at Gulfstream. He's bankable for Mrs. Weber. And last week, didn't even get a chance to talk to you about Let It Ride Mom, who won the Whimsical. So the spring is sprung, Mark.
He's bankable. That's Awesome Slew's brother.
Right.
So he's coming home.
Well, you're rolling, and we'll head toward Baltimore, and undoubtedly plenty to look forward to. And, Mark, I came so close, and Gadot, we're certainly, this audience was on her from day one, thanks to you.
Confirm that. I know you were, and you were a believer when many others weren't. And hopefully she opened some people's eyes.
Big time. Mark Cassie, everybody, and between Gary Barber and Jack Oxley and Live Oak and more. Just running them all over the place and running well. Let's take a break. We're at top of the hour. Come back. Andy Serling, Jay Privman, Stuart Pittman, and much more. At the Races. Hour 2 after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 888-938-4643.
Hey, He's got a long way to go to come and get Army Mule, who's pulling away by five.
2 years ago, Pennsylvania bred Army Mule was purchased at the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic sale at Timonium. Now he's a grade one winner.
Army Mule, ultra impressive in the Cartery Flew Home.
There'll be more than 30 Pennsylvania breds at the Fasig Tipton two-year-olds in training sale, May 21st and 22nd at Timonium, Maryland. Breeding and racing in Pennsylvania, it's a winner.
While being on the cutting edge of scientific and nutritional research, Biomedical Research Labs has developed the number one selling equine blood builder in the world, the most advanced muscle builder and tie-up preventer, and now the best anti-bleeding paste ever made. To find out how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Guard can help your equine athletes, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.